fine. First, we were talking about your time at Capua, at PG66. And we were talking about the lice and the bedbugs problem. Now, you had a way out of that, didn't you?
Yes, we did indeed, yes. Yes, we made hammocks after the stream which came round the Red Cross parcels. Now, the hooks were wrong, but not very wide. And the bed were down inside, which left the gangway probably 6 foot down the middle. So when they made a hammock, it could be fastened to one bed on one side of the room and one on the other, and you could jump in at night, just like if you're on board ship. And there was a line of these right in the middle, which was all right, except for the bloke furthest from the door, who had to weave his way underneath or top. But at least it kept his way from the bed.
How did you make them?
Ah, yes, we had... I don't know whether fishermen or lived in a fishing village, but he showed us how to fasten the skins together so that the knots didn't slip.
So and where'd you get the string?
Where did we get it from? Off the Red Cross parcels. After the issue, some of the chaps would open the parcel straight away and they'd leave the string behind. And we'd go and collect all this and then fasten it around the Red Cross parcel all together. It'd probably be a yard. And over the time, you can turn quite a lot of this stuff. And then make yourself like a Hawaiian fishing net, square or oblong, probably 7 foot long and 3 foot wide, and string it to the two bed posts on one side and the two on the other side, and get yourself hung out.
And it wouldn't collapse?
We never had one collapse, no. Very fortunate, but we got rid of the bed bugs that way. The horrible thing, the white, bigger flies, terrible. And to get rid of the flies before the hammocks went to put on it, half a dozen would start at one end of the boat, wave the blankets, and move them down.
You mentioned, yeah.
To dry the flies out. Yes. We did get the lousing powder from the Italian, but we used that from the change the trousers on the inside out and put this stuff down the seam, which it did keep the bugs away. As soon as you ran out of powder, they were back again. Whether it was warmth or not, or whether it was just the lackadaisical way the Italians went on, we never saw anybody coming in the camp to clean. It was left to the prisoners to do their own cleaning. Yeah, and everybody was clean. There was no hot water. You could have a shower, you could have a wash, but it was all cold. And the basin, there were no basin, there were big peat troughs raised about 2 foot thick from the ground. And the water came in at one end and ran down. It was all right if you get the tap end, you got the clean water. But if you were at the other end, you got the soapy water. You might be getting up early and getting there first. Yes, we also, I don't know if I mentioned it, had all the hair, the head shaved off.
You did mention it, yeah.
Which was very nice, because you can get your head under the tap and give it a little rousing, keep it clean for a day. Yes.
What about the guards? Did you see much of them? How did you get on with them?
Yes, it was all the Italian guards. We're not inside the mine, it was all outside. It was all right, and they were a source of food which otherwise we couldn't have got. For a pack of 10 players, you get four, probably five big red cobs. It was a matter of trust, though. You'd show you the cobs and you'd show them the fangs and sling the fangs on them when they opened. Found was all right, then they'd throw the cobbler back to you. Coffee was another one. You can get unlimited bread for a quarter of a pound packet of coffee. But again, you'd both got to take it on trust. There was, I would say, inoffensive people, the camp guards. They kept well out, and they didn't come inside. They've probably been told not to fraternise with anything. They never wanted the English subject. Very strange that, because under the Geneva Convention we had with the Italians, we didn't get a ration of 7 cigarettes and 2 cigars every day. But none of the old soldiers there would touch them. You know, it's a good hospital plan, we don't want them. They got the plague which came in the parcel. But with us being new here, with no stocks, so we smoked the cigars and we smoked the cigarettes and let the Italians have the players for bread. As a ration, there was one bread cob and 3/4 of an ounce of cheese and 1 pint of soup a day, and that was a lot. So if you get an extra bread cob a day, you'll do it.
How was your health holding up with this? Because that's not much to...
Not much health. I think the sunshine helped a lot. So, we were very active in the Italian camps. In the one at Capua, we would walk around the inside, but there wasn't room to play games apart from, what do you call it? We throw a ring over the net, catch it, or sorry. No. There is a name for it, you know. Quite. Tennis points. You probably find room to play tennis at 10 points, but you remember if there's a thousand or so people in camp, you're not very often get on the 10 points. But certainly wasn't room for either cricket or football. So the chief occupation there, walking round and round inside the room for 5 or 6 times. I know it got a bit monotonous, but if two of you went, you could talk to each other as you walked. And kept it that way.
Now you got there, and Mark, we're going to take a copy of your diary, which you found since my last visit. You got there on March the 17th, 1943, at Campo 66, and then June 16th, 43, you went to Campo 53. Where was that near?
Ancona, on the
Adriatic. Do you remember? Were you warned before the move? Did you all go, or was it just a draft of you?
Most of us went. Let us know probably the day before or the night before, get your kit packed. You know, I remember we went to Stagley Column next morning, worn out. Nobody had got kit back, it was all right. But a lot of us have got old main ones out of probably my guest child, or something like that. Just enough to keep your few possessions in. And then we were onto the train. Of course, the trains were the old horse boxes. This is on the side. 10 horses or 40 men. Yeah. Which, I don't know if you ever saw that film, Ryan's Express. It's similar to that. We were just prisoners on it. Yes. And I remember going through the Brenner Pass. And I remember in the middle of the night looking out of the grill. First time in my life, I couldn't believe it. There were the Alps, all shining bright in the moonlight. I didn't see anything like that before. Yeah. It was a nice journey. The only thing is, I don't know what he told you, you had a thunderbox in each wagon in the middle. A square box, probably. 5 foot square, something like that. More across the middle, leaving 2 sides. And there'd be a circular hole on each side, and when you wanted to do your business, you sat on it. Because it was filled with straw, which was supposed to soak the water. And we got holes in the floor, and we'd lying in the afternoon. When you've been in it a couple of days, you began to smell a little bit.
Now, the first move then was to Campo 53 at near Ancona.
Near Ancona, yeah.
And what was that camp like? What?
That camp was much better. It was where 66 had been wooden chalets, wooden huts. This was all brick built. You know, they were continental, the mid-countries. There were plenty of pretty hairy inside, and the monks were three-tiered with genuine wider passenger. And of course, the weather was getting better. And by half past 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, the sun was coming around, and they're pretty pleasant in the morning. Very pleasant. Again, there wasn't a lot of exercise room. There were seven more than the middle one, but they did have a field adjoining which we were allowed to use. And we played football on there, and I can remember, I don't know if you've been in Mediterranean storm. It's all nice and sunshine and dry, and then suddenly, woof, the sky opened and down it tumbled. Was in the middle of this football match, rough and tumble game, and this happened, and the field turned to mud, and the football turned to rugby in the mud. We finished up, but everybody had to get back and get a cold shower to get the mud out, and there was more clothes hanging on the fence around them. I thought I'd stop that. Yeah. The more wet mattress dresses drying on the camp railing, and then the sun came out and back to normal again. Yeah.
Did you play much football?
Yes, we did. We played a lot of football, and every team, every hut had a team like the English league. You know, Arsenal and Liverpool and Manchester United and Forest. And so it went on. And you probably had one game every day for an hour and a half, where the young boys like myself would play from the pitch on the semi professional. You know. And there were some good players too. And then we got to the final. And both in Germany and Italy, you couldn't get near the place. The Italian guards and the officers, they took pride of place and sat round on poles, and they really appreciated the English football. Of course, in them days, it was the old-fashioned football, you know, soccer all down and army boots, so kick and rush, and plenty of body charges and shoulder charges. And looking back, I don't know how we did it, to tell you the truth, the amount of food we got. We did it, we managed it. Yeah.
Any other sport on that field?
No. There was the runners, you know, doing the 100-yard sprint and whatnot. But we didn't have any kit for hockey or cricket. We could get hold of a ball, I mean, probably 50 cigarettes and get you a football. That was okay. We sent the kids at home, except for the final day, sent the kids at home, jacket on each side with the goalpost. So you could get a ball from the Italians or Germans. Okay. Yes, it was I would say the football was a lifesaver. Gave you something to talk about and something to look forward to.
Was there any concerts or musical? I mean, you mentioned the singing, but well, you know, any concert party type things or theatre performances?
Yes, in Germany.
I mean, in Italy, really.
In Italy, we didn't get much of it. You know, you'd get a group of singers, but we didn't have any recognised concert hall. So the Italians, you'd think, knowing the love of music, we would have been. But no.
What about comic turns in the huts and things?
Yeah, you get that at night time. We had one chap, not Ted Ray, his name was John Ray. Well, he was an Englishman, but he was the same type of comic as Ted Ray. And we did have a professional jockey who would come around and talk to us. We had a London taxi driver, and one or two bus drivers. We had an artist, a knight who would come in and do one or two sketches. And we had Alan Bolt, what he was in relation to the Bolt family, musicians, not number. We had Alan Bolt, and he was pretty good talking about music. We had an RSM from the RASC. Although he's got nothing to play, he would describe music to us. And if you took your notebook, he'd write you a chord out, or write you a scale, and tell you to study that when you're not looking. Yes, nearly every night we had somebody come to talk to us, which made the day went by.
Did anything much happen while you were at Campo 53? You were there until September 19th. But, you know, the Germans took over on the 16th.
Yes.
So you were there about 3 months before that. Anything else happened before that, or was it just sort of life in the camp?
It was just life in the camp. It was easy going. I'm afraid we tended to forget really the war. The war was well south.
Was there any thought of escape, or did they have escape committees or anything like that?
We had escape committees. There wasn't a lot of, from what I saw, there wasn't a lot of interest at the time. I think most of them went through a rough patch, and there was content to sort of recoup and find out what the next move would be. It wasn't until the Germans moved in.
Did you have any idea before it happened that the Italians were going to drop out of the war? Was there any clues in the way the guards behaved? Or?
Yes, we had clues, and they more or less said we're making peace and stay where you are and you'll be picked up. The message we got from the senior British officer in the camp was we expect the Italian to leave, but stay where you are, because if you get on the roads, hard to come dancing and you probably get shot. So for goodness sake, stay where you are, there's plenty of food in camp, and you'll be all right. Of course, having said that, when we woke up the next morning, there were the Germans in the sentry box, who came in during the night. I had a friend with me from the system, and I spoke to him the day before, and we had a map and a plan, and I said, well, Joe, we won't do anything today, we'll give it till the morning. So we won't. The Germans were there. I went down to see Joe and he was gone. His wife must have been proud of him, because even when I was in Germany, I got a letter from her asking me if I knew where he was. But he was on the roofs in Italy about 7 months. And his people just didn't know. Yeah, he was alright to him, he knew what he was doing, he was out there. I feel sorry for his wife and his parents, and it was a terrible time for him.
Did many go like that?
No, not a lot, not a lot.
So what happened when the Germans, you woke up in the morning, they were there?
Yeah.
So you didn't hear them coming or anything?
I didn't hear them coming, there was no shooting, no firing, there was it. And my first impression, I went out and they were just changing guards. And the thing that struck me was, there was a chap sitting on his stool on the tower, and his mate came up the steps and they shook hands and changed over and on and on. Now, our lads don't do that, do they? They probably present on the salute, but no, they just shook hands as if they hadn't seen him for 6 months and they're not with them. Yeah. But they were alright, they didn't interfere. We did get the message via the camp parliament. But I don't think we'll carry on as normal. If you behave yourself, there'll be no trouble. The Germans won't interfere. Stay where you are. Which we did.
But not for long.
Not for long.
They moved you, didn't they? Yeah. They came in the 16th, and then the 19th, you left.
You left. Yes.
This is September 43. So you just, not, there was no change really for those
no
two or three days?
No, we just got fed and watered, and then he was told in the morning that get your kit back and move it, because the British troops were advancing rather fast. And we marched to the station, no, we didn't march, we ambled to the station. I remember, I got, I didn't know where I got it from, but I managed to get there little wooden box and the molten kit in there. A spare shirt and a couple of pair of socks, toothbrush, shaving kit. I did talk about shaving kit before we moved, because I had the German of the district on the stairs, and they moved me in and unscrewed the bottom of the shaving brush, stuck the ring in, jammed some shaving soap in and screwed the bottom on again. But it's a thing I never looked at. I carried it with me all the way and came home with it. But they...
What were the searches like?
They were pretty thorough. I will give the German a do. They gave you a thorough medical as well as a kit of search. And a thorough medical, teeth, eyes, rock. And if you got any complaints, health, you went to the lazarette and they checked. He was alright. They were pretty thorough, huh? We didn't have an X-ray, which in those days was something rather special. Yes, it was a...
So how did they go about moving you?
Well, say we ambled to the station and then we came into the Toulouse and the station pairs and the count to 20, that's the wait there. And then the guard had gone down another 20 for the next carriage and so on. Until it was on and then off they went. Yeah. But again, there was no trouble. Nobody tried to escape. I mean, it was silly if them, because on the end of the platform was the old machine gun. And then, I suppose there were a couple of snipers lined up as well.
And what was this train journey like?
Again, tedious. It was all right. As I say, the six Germans, but one of them always sat with his legs out, open the doors and sat with them. Providing you behave yourself, move around two at a time, you don't sit with him. And he was quite pleasant walking, riding through the trace to the Italian and then the Austrian countryside into Germany. It was an experience. Food was very, very bad. I mean, all we had to drink was water, a big bucket of water, and do it yourself. The Germans dug out pieces of them black bread, and rubber shoes each morning, and that was a ration for the day. As soon as it got towards evening, before even the twilight set, in you went, and the doors would be shut, and that would make the night. The only really got was looking through the grill up on the top. Because remember, they offer cattle on the meat, the air grills are on the side, which you would look through the slats. Yes, it's a bit tedious. And of course, once we got into Austria, Germany, there was always a threat when the British planes over the railways. It's probably lucky we got through without any money. And that was an experience.
What happened there?
They up the gates, went inside the wires, and although we didn't know it at the time, they were the gas on them. Like big garages with up and over doors. You stripped off, clothes went in the basket, similar to a supermarket basket, and all your clothes in there. Then he went through the showers. Say, turn the water on them and shout after 3 minutes, finish, and they got air upon them. And you stood in the hot air. And then when he looked through the little door, you told him he was waiting for them, and they'd gone through the steam of the house. And they sat there with the old sheep shearer machine, peddling it and his mate. And all the way went under the long, continue length. And then the next block, he got a bucket of glass, or give them a big brush, and you got painted for. And then you close it on, and you was away. Yeah, but it was thorough. There was no lice, not like in the prison, not like in the Italian camps.
So what happened then?
By this time, it's getting towards nightfall, and maybe something like 20, was it? The shop was in Walbrook and said, stay there tonight.
Now, where was this exactly? Was this Stalag 4B?
Stalag 4B, which was, as we found out later, was the camp for the airmen.
And that was near which town?
Millbeg. Millbeg on Elbe. We found out later that the Elbe went right round it in a loop, and it camps within the loop. Okay, a bit more like how we use that.
And what was the camp like? It was an airman's camp.
It was an airman's camp, and it was very, very clean. And it was organised, and we had a camp theatre. And they put shows on. I remember seeing a gunman from Manchester and Dover Road. I remember them Strickland and Elizabeth Barrett Browning. They were fantastic shows. But, you only got a ticket now and again, there were so many of us, and it was 5 cigarettes to go in. That was the, of course, they used that for currency with the Germans to get the stage equipment, pianos, and one or two brass instruments have got all bought with cigarettes from the Germans. Yeah, but the first night we was in, and I wandered around, and I couldn't find a bed anywhere. All I got was a great coat, and I finished up in the washroom. All I got was a concrete floor. I've never been so cold in my life. For the first time, I realised what it was to be cold right through to the bone. I shivered and shivered and shivered, and there was nothing I could do about it. I just stopped there, and then they came about 9 o'clock and whipped us out and took us into one of the old proper wooden barricades, and that was the first time for a long while. It was warm and it was comfortable, and we got plenty of room to move around. And we began to make friends with Belgium and South Africans. I can't remember an Irishman, but a wonderful Scotsman. I suppose my friend was from his regiment to be captured. But it was good. And the parcels, the red cross parcels were coming through. And at the end, there was a washroom. And in the washroom was one of the old-fashioned boilers, you know, the big round boilers that grandmas used to have on West Day. And we collect all the old Red Cross boxes, and they used that for the boiling water for massive tea. And we had a matching in the morning and one at night. Couldn't do any more because that's all the fuel we got to keep the boilers. And then one bright spot, the electrician, real spot, he found out that he could make a miniature measurement. And he did this. I don't know, talking about Keith Robinson. It was a salmon tin, a round salmon tin with top and bottom removed. And a smaller one with the top and bottom fitting inside. And the two kept apart by a little saw-off from fountain pens. So the outside was insulated from the inside. But they got a bit of twin plates, one bit connected to the outer tin, one to the inner tin. And when nobody was looking, he'd have a mess tin on his seat and touch these on the electric wire with the lamps. And the water boiling in 2 or 3 minutes. And if you wanted a massive room in the day, you have to take it here and you take your mess in for the water and put it on the end of the pile and it would walk to them. But you have to take it in as a watchman. So if you whip the wires out, if the jellies would come in. That's how we got a cup of hot tea. Very, very efficient, very crude, but very efficient.